Is there a difference between truth and assumptions about what is true? The founders of America said that they believed in self-evident truths, and among those are that there's a creator who has endowed us with our rights. But many today deny the existence of God. They assume that atheists like Richard Dawkins or Sam Harris have done their homework in supposedly disproving God. David Richardson Jr. has worked for 30 years for Campus Crusade for Christ, now called CRU. Richardson says the problem with many assertions in our culture today, such as there is no God, is that these are just based on assumptions. Consumption be done about these assumptions? Richardson has written a book called Transparent, How to See Through the Powerful Assumptions That Control You. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and we welcome David Richardson to the program. David, thank you for joining us.
Jerry, thanks for having me on today.
Sure. Okay, so explain to us about assumptions, and let's use the example about God, belief in God. Is atheism somehow a proven notion, a disproven notion, or basically a series of assumptions?
Oh, it's definitely a series of assumptions. That's the interesting thing about assumptions and how they work is that we all make them. You can't help it. That's just the nature of being a limited human.
Your worldview, even as a Christian, even as an atheist, we all have assumptions.
Absolutely. The interesting thing is if you're trying to figure out whether something's true or not, you eventually reach a limit. You reach a wall. You reach a place where, I don't know, it just is. You know, if you've ever had a conversation with a five-year-old, you've been in those shoes before. Why is that? Well, it's because of this. Well, why is that? Because of that. And eventually you reach a place where you say, I don't know. And when you make that statement, you're actually talking about something that's self-existent, the thing you don't question, the thing that you can't prove, and the thing that you accept to be real and or true on faith, which basically means every person you meet is a person of faith, just people of different faiths. So, in fact, atheists likewise are people of faith. They don't know there's no God. They trust there's no God.
Okay, so when the founders said we hold these truths to be self-evident, do you want to just even comment on that idea? Self-evident truth?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, the notion of we hold these truths to be self-evident, that is, we don't have to question that. That's the thing we don't question. The thing we can't prove, the thing that we accept on faith, the thing that's obvious. Of course, anybody that knows anything knows this is the case. This is a statement of assumption. These are Christian assumptions. And the very first truth that's taught in the Bible is in Genesis 1:1. It says, in the beginning, God created. That there's two realities, not just one. There's two realities. There's physical and non-physical things, yes. There's angels and demons and minds and spirits, as well as physical things, but they're all created. There's this created reality, but then there's a creator who's distinctly different. And our founders in this country knew that from the very beginning. We are endowed by our creator, and it's the thing that we assume we don't even question. Of course, anybody that knows anything knows that this is the case. And that's why understanding what a person's basic assumptions are critical, because they're the things that are never examined. It's the autopilot in the back of our head. And if we don't know what the settings on the autopilot are, we could fly into a mountain.
So explain how you would interact, let's say, with somebody who assumes that atheism is the truth and that belief in God and the Christian God is essentially a fairy tale. In fact, I remember Richard Dawkins, I remember seeing a little clip where he said something like, to believe that Jesus Christ rose from the dead is as sound as believing in, you know, Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yep. Yep, that's exactly how somebody from his particular set of assumptions would answer that question. The interesting thing is that he likewise is assuming something that he doesn't question, that he can't prove, and he accepts on faith, just like you and I do. He just does it differently. So the thing that he's assuming to be real is just a natural material world. It's the matter and energy, random interactions of matter and energy produce complex organization, complex organism. That's how everything works. That's where everything came from. That's the nature of everything. There's no God. There's no angels. There's no demons. There's no That's tooth fairies, leprechauns, and Easter bunnies. You know, that's the language he was using. You were just describing it. But the interesting thing is it possible that something non-physical like God could exist beyond the scope of his knowledge? Well, it's possible, unless he's all-knowing, which he's not, and would also make him God by definition if he did. It would actually disprove his very case. But if it's possible that there's something non-physical beyond the scope of his knowledge, then the only way that he could eliminate that possibility is if he had access to all places at all times, which he doesn't, and which would also make him God by definition. So both ways, it's the thing that he doesn't know. He's assuming. There's no way that he could know that there is no God beyond the scope of his knowledge. And so when he does that, he is not questioning the fact that everything is just. That can't be questioned, because if it does, it blows everything up. It gives your brain the blue screen of death. And at the same time, it's the thing that he cannot prove, because he doesn't have access to that information, that knowledge. And he accepts it to be true and real on faith, because how else can you make an assumption? You don't know it. You trust it. All of us are in the same shoes. We eventually get to a place where I don't know, it just is. And that just is something that we don't question, can't prove. And every atheist is in those shoes. The interesting thing is, not every atheist thinks like Richard Dawkins. Even though materialists, Kim, do think that way, most atheists actually are not materialists. They're idealists. They're humanists. They believe in an ideal human and the fact that we can become our ideal selves and make humanity into this vision that we have. Even though we see the flaws and faults in humanity, we can fix them. If we all work together with our enlightened guidance and collective effort, if we all work together, we can make a better world. How many times do you hear that every day? But that, too, is an assumption that there are things called ideals, and ideals are real for this kind of assumer, and that they can actually be achieved. And if that's true, there's a lot of terrible things that come out of that.
Well, explain to me how you kind of came up with this whole approach to apologetics. It's all based on trying to understand the underlying assumptions. So especially in your work with Campus Crusade for Christ, in dealing with unbelievers on an intellectual basis, just trying to lead them to Jesus.
Yes, that was my ultimate motivation in developing it. It originally came out of my postgraduate degree that I did at the University of Oxford, where I was studying atheist and agnostic professors, because my ministry for the better part of 20 years was with college and university professors. I wasn't working with students. I was working with their teachers. And I was wanting to understand what makes them tick. You know, why do you stiff arm God, and why do you like atheism? And so I did actual hour-long interviews with atheist and agnostic professors, trying to get at the bottom of where they're coming from. And can they give me any clue how to reach them for Christ? Well, they actually told me. They didn't know they told me, but they did. And one of the keys to reaching an intellectual or a professional who is a non-believer is that you have to be able to relate God to real world things. So when a Christian invokes God as an explanation for something, that doesn't make any sense to them. They understand, oh yeah, okay, God is for your personal life, you know, makes you feel better about your sin, helps you to live a better life, you know, a more moral, ethical kind of person. Yeah, I get that. But when you invoke God as an explanation in physics or in economics or in art or anything else like that, you're saying that God contributes to knowledge? Oh, how does that work? It doesn't make any sense to them. But the Christians who can connect truth from God in the Bible to real world things, not just personal ethics, but real world things, so that you have a plausible, perhaps even better explanation than your regular secularist does, those skeptics want to have a conversation with you.
Well, okay.
And so we discovered that. That's what sent me on this quest.
Okay, so we have about 4 or 5 minutes left in this discussion. Give me a concrete example where, let's say, somebody, you know, came to faith in Jesus based on this approach that you're talking about.
Yeah, well, actually, there's a great example of an English professor that I met a number of years ago, where as I was first getting to know her, I was teaching her how to use these techniques. It's a critical thinking exercise using my critical assumptions test. And, you know, that's why we created all of our education materials at learntodiscern.com, is to help people learn how to do this. And she was using this in her rhetoric classes to persuade people and help them craft better articles and speeches to be more persuasive. And if you understand the assumptions that your audience is making, you can make a big difference. Well, she loved that approach. The interesting thing that after she'd been teaching this for five semesters in her class, the thing I didn't realize at first is that her husband, who'd been coming to church, was a believer. But she wasn't. She was actually doing opposition research. And she thought that this would be the technique that would allow her to dislodge her Christian students and their quaint superstitions and myth and discover a more enlightened understanding of the world. Well, as she was honestly teaching this as an effective critical thinking methodology in her rhetoric classes, after five semesters, she flipped. She became a believer. And now she thinks it's her mission to introduce her students to Christ through critical thinking using our critical assumptions test.
Oh, you know what, David? You know what this makes me think of? This makes me think of C.S. Lewis had a tutor, and his tutor taught him critical thinking. His tutor was an atheist, but as C.S. Lewis would later think through a lot of different aspects of life, he ended up becoming the most reluctant convert, to use his phrase, you know, in all of England. It's kind of along these lines, right? And we have about 3 minutes left.
Yes, that's exactly right. The interesting thing is, we tend to try and put Christian truth out there without equipping people with any ability to recognize anything is true. And so that's why what we do at Assumptions Institute and our resources at learntodiscern.com is to teach people a specific method for critical thinking. So you don't have to guess at it. You just operate the system. And with a little practice, you can discern what's true and what's not in the classroom, in the media, or in the culture at large. And with some practice, you can actually do it in 30 seconds using this system.
Okay, give an example. Give an example. And again, we hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal and are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. How about that? That's perfect.
That by itself is assuming, first of all, that there's a creator and a creation. It's assuming that we are custom creations of God. That's the fifth answer to or the fifth question on my critical assumptions test. And likewise, it's also answering the last question. What is humanity's basic problem? The basic problem is that God is good and we're not. And so we know that these inalienable rights come from him, not from us. That we are the kind of human beings we are, physical and non-physical creations, because he's the one that made us. So when we are looking at a message, we're asking some key questions on the critical assumptions test. There's eight of them. And you find the one question that is underneath the topic. It's never at the surface, or very seldom is it at the surface, but it's always the question under the question. You're assuming an answer to the question, what is a human being? You're answering a question, an answer to the question, what is good, or what is humanity's basic problem? There's several different questions that we can use to evaluate and find what the underlying assumption is. And for our founders, the way they answer the question, what a human being is and what humanity's basic problem is, reveals their core assumption, which is there's a creator and a creation. If there's a creator and creation, then the creator is the source and we are the reflection, because that's how we were designed by him. So that means our rights come from him, not from us, not from government. It comes from him.
Right. Okay, we're out of time. LearnToDiscern.com. Again, David Richardson Jr., the name of his book, Transparent, How to See Through the Powerful Assumptions That Control You. Thank you, David. All the best.
Jerry, thanks so much for having me on.